Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you today until 3 o'clock. I want to go straight over to Teresa now. Teresa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Teresa, you've been watching that carry-on in the Dáil.
Indeed, indeed.
What's your reaction to that, Teresa?
Disgraceful, utterly disgraceful. These are people that's meant to be representing us. And the carry-ons of them is disgusting. They were like children in a playground.
I don't know with that many children to play around, get away with what Michael Lowry is pictured all over the place today doing. Well, what he's saying, it was an errant gesture under provocation and that it was taken out of context. I think the rest of us would call it giving the two fingers. Teresa, just tell me a bit about yourself, because you do a very important job there.
Yeah, well, I'm a carer with Wicklow Community Service here in Wicklow Town. And all of us carers do a really good job, as far as I'm concerned. And, like, for the work that we do, the wages that we get is ridiculous. And at the end of the day, for a carer to go into elderly people's homes to assist them with living at home for as long as they possibly can, we're the eyes and the ears of the nurses, of the OTs, of all of them. If we see anything going wrong, we're the ones that will inform our line manager, and they in return will contact whoever's needed to be contacted. And for our payments that we get is absolutely ridiculous. And it's not just that, Katie. It's like you go into homes, you see it in some homes, not all homes, some homes, and you see it in friends' homes and relatives of friends, and that the elderly are struggling. The elderly are really struggling. And I feel there is no one, but no one up in the government really cares all that much, because if they cared that much, they would have got their act together long before yesterday, long before last week. You take, for instance, an old man or an old woman that can no longer live at home, their siblings can't contend with them, let it be through Alzheimer's, through whatever illness it is. They have to, when they get sick, then they're in a hospital, they are waiting on a bed in a nursing home. Now, this person is waiting in a nursing in a hospital for, it could be a month, it could be 2 months, until a bed becomes vacant, or until Fair Deal has passed through that, yeah, there's adequate funding there for the bed in the nursing home. Like,
and we know the trouble, yeah. People. We know the problems that for yes. The situation, to leave somebody in that situation is desperate anyway, but we know the problem that's causing to the system as well.
Exactly. And like, these are the people that paved the pathways for us, made our lives what they are today. They try to make a better life for us than what they had. And now at the end of the day, they're shoved in the corner. Shut up. Shut your mouth there. You've served your purpose. That's the way that I feel that the government treats them.
And Teresa, I know that you've had a tough time yourselves in your house there, because you needed carers for your own husband there.
I sure did, yeah, bless him. Yeah, I had two wonderful carers, let me stress, two wonderful carers that came in.
Tell us what happened to Billy.
Billy developed Alzheimer's, well, dementia, 15 years ago. Now he's 67 this year, so we got it very young.
Oh, he was only, what, 52?
Yeah, so we kept him at home. He was pretty good. He'd stayed at a level for so long and, you know, kept him at home for as long as I could. Then we had the two carers coming in, and they were brilliant. Billy bonded with them great. They had a great personality, just like Billy. And but then it got to an extreme where even the carers, even though I had noticed it, but kind of refused to accept it, because I just didn't want to part with the person I loved so dearly. And they had brought it to my attention, saying, look, Teresa, Billy is pretty bad. You know, he's crying all the time. He's afraid. He doesn't know what he's afraid of. And there's no getting around him. And so it ended up that I brought him into Lockdownstown Hospital. Mm-hmm. Now, he did have a slight infection, but they had to keep him there for about a month until we found a nursing home that could take him. And lucky enough, my manager, Andrea, she called me into the office one day. She was so kind and sweet about it. I'll never forget it. She called me into the office and she went through all the nursing homes. She made the phone calls for me. And we got him a beautiful nursing home down in Arklow, the Ashland House.
And he's comfortable and happy there now, Teresa.
He loves it now. It was so hard at first. Oh, my God. It was horrible. Yeah. The hardest thing I ever had to do. But then he's. I used to take him home on the weekends, and that was great. But now he's got to a stage where he can't. I can take him home, but he has to go back there to sleep. He's got too bad for that side of it, but he loves it. He calls it home. Whenever I take him out each day, whenever I take him out, he'd say, Teresa, when am I going home? That's to his nursing home.
Yeah. And God, and he's only 67 still. He's such a young man.
Yeah. But it's lovely. I'll have to say, Katie, I'll have to say about that nursing home, it's lovely. They haven't spoiled rotten. The staff is wonderful. Jan is great with him, and Vichy, he absolutely adores Vichy. So Vichy is the nurse. So I'm happy because he's happy. Now I leave there and my heart will be down around my kneecaps. But he's happy.
And that's the main thing for you. And you're working away, Teresa. And just to go back to those carers, like they would have been with you a long time then.
Yeah, they were with me about three years or thereabouts.
And you become, and I think that's that's another part of it, of course. You become, a carer that really cares, becomes a part of the family. I know, like, we are still in touch with, my dad has gone, 18 or 19 years now, and we'd still be in touch with one of the carers that looked after him towards, the end. Because they become such an important part of every family.
Absolutely. I was out there today and one of my clients, I had knitted her a shawl and I went in and I gave it to her. I said, I don't have a mother. I said, God took her. I said, but I've adopted you. So Sunday's Mother's Day. And she actually cried and she said, did you make that for me?
Yeah. You love your job, Teresa, don't you?
I live for it. Absolutely live for it, yeah.
But you'd like to get paid better for it.
I would. And I'd like to see a big difference being made for the elderly. There's not much out there for the elderly, really and truly, and the same for the disabled. You know, they're the two vulnerable sets in our country, is the elderly and the disabled. And I just feel like, they need a voice. They do need a voice and they deserve respect and happiness and contentment.
And when you see then what's going on in the Dáil, what would you like to see them specifically for carers? What do you think, if you were, the Taoiseach in front of you tomorrow, what would you be saying to him?
Okay. I would say to him, I would give him this equation. When he gets older, and perhaps he's no family members or anyone around him to take care of him. Would he really like us carers to come in and assist him to live at home independently for as long as he can? And if he would he not consider in making our lives easier by giving us a rise? Okay, giving us a rise. Because we're the eyes and ears of this community. You take a look, even the doctor's surgery. If an old person is really, really ill, they can't get an appointment. And if they get an appointment, it's only 15 minutes. You know, like years ago, you used to have a community nurse that would call out to the houses maybe once a month, and she could see what was going wrong or what was needed and all of that. You had doctors that was able to make house calls. No longer happens. You have to wait for weeks for a doctor's appointment or go see a care doc at night that does not know anything about you.
Can I ask you, Teresa, do you have to cover your own travel expenses or is that covered now?
Well, we wouldn't get a whole lot now, Put it that way. Like, you know, we wouldn't be driving the country on it. We just get a little small amount, but that's nothing to do with the wear and tear and all of that. And, you know,
how much an hour is the current rate, Teresa?
Well, it will depend. It will depend on your experience, on the amount of years you've worked there. But to me, that is another thing that I do not agree with. I do not agree with, because being a carer, you use your initiative is the main thing that you will use, and your common sense. I mean, you can have somebody that's been caring there for, 20, 30 years. Things change, people change. So why should that person get more than the person that's just come in that can do just as much as the person that was there for 30 years? It should be a set rate for everyone. I honestly feel that it should be a set rate. And this thing, like, you go and you do this course, you do that course. It's great to be able to put things down, pen to paper. You go in and do hands-on, see can you do it.
Yeah, that's always, and especially for the job you're doing. Teresa, I've got other callers on as annoyed as you are about what's going on in the Dáil when there's urgent business to be taken care of. But thanks so much and best of luck to Billy.
Thank you very much, Katie.
Thanks, Teresa. Lovely talking to you.
God bless.
Antoinette, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, Antoinette. You, again, were watching that carry-on yesterday and again today. What was going through your head when you were watching that?
Well, the government was voted in last year and they put it to all women of Ireland that they were going to give them free HRT from the 1st of January, and there's no sign of it. And they said that it's there, it's available, and it's that they're going to pay the cost price to the chemists. But the chemists are going to lose out, so somebody'd have to make up the difference. So somebody going to a chemist for free HRT, they get handed their packet and say, well, the difference of that is 10, 15, well, then it's not free. So we've heard nothing about the free HRT. Again, the women of Ireland are being failed by the country, and then that carry on in the Dáil yesterday. Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable is the word for it.
Go on. They haven't even addressed it. Do you know what I mean? They've just pushed it off and said, oh, it's there, it's available. But it actually isn't. It's not available. Like, there's free contraceptive and there's free contraceptive consultations. There are. That's great. That's happening. But what about us women in our 50s, 60s, having to put up with these daily symptoms, and they're horrendous every day? And to hear that this is going to be free, finally, Ireland has taken a turn, and we're still none the wiser.
And you're on HRT at the moment, Antoinette, are you?
I'm not. I'm on a drug called Viosa.
Oh, what's that?
Which is Yeah, so the drug Veosa, it was landed here January 24. And that just specifically targets the sweats, which was my main issue. And that, but when the government announced back that they before the voting, they said we're going to give this free HRT. I think Claire in the morning had some a lady on from a menopause. She went to menopause seminars and she actually brought up, it's very vague what they're saying because there are other drugs that tackle other symptoms like Veosa and they haven't said whether that's free. And when I went on Veosa, I was told it was on the, it was going on the drugs payment scheme. It still isn't. Right, and it's €100 a month.
Oh, it's €100 a month, and that's what that's yeah, what you're that's what you're paying now out of your own
that's
pocket.
That's what I'm paying at the moment. And do you know something, Kate? I just want to say it's not about the money. I'm working. I can afford the €100 a month, and I'll pay it rather than go through the daily sweats and the nightly sweats. But it's just another empty promise from them people in the Dáil yesterday that had nothing better to do than to find out which one of them had the bigger egos, because it was all just shouting. Nobody could hear anything.
And on a day-to-day basis, Antoinette, this is a real issue for you.
Yeah, it is a real issue for me. The symptoms, the weight gain, everything, it's just one thing after another, after another. And when you hear, I mean, look at our mother's generation. My God, they had to just shut up about it and not say anything. They weren't allowed to even speak about it. You know, you'd hear your mum saying, oh, look at her over there. That poor woman's going through the change. And that's the way it was. It was like a black velvet being put over the whole thing. Don't talk about it. And now we've come out and we've talked about it. And we're getting marriage equality and we're moving on.
Yeah, well, I think in fairness to the man who normally sits in this chair, Joe did a huge amount of work in getting this conversation going along. Joe and the whole team here did extraordinary work in getting this conversation going and bringing us to where we are now. Where we are, as we said, expecting or told that this was going to now become a free drug for women, menopausal women. This Veosa, do you think that's going to be considered a menopause, like it's going to be considered HRT, or does it need to, like, because I've just been handed, just let me read this out, I've been handed this statement. This is the HSE commissioned a health technology assessment on Veosa, this product, in April of last year, the 8th of April last year, and is awaiting submission of a HTA dossier by the application company, and they're saying any queries as to when that dossier will be submitted should go to the company, and they give Astellas Pharma is the company that makes that drug, and they're saying they basically have to apply to get this. So it's under consideration for the community drug schemes, which would mean you could get it if you had a medical card or long term illness, or you get it under the drug payment scheme, and they say it would be used to treat severe vasometer. Is that his vasomotor system symptoms? This is the sweats and the hot flushes associated with menopause. So we're not sure actually if this will come in under the heading HRT, are we?
No. No. And when my doctor told me about it in the beginning, and she said, Anthony, this, honestly, she said, this is going to be the best thing for you. She said, it's going on the drugs payment scheme. That was January 24. So when I went to the chemist was like, no, it's not on the drugs payment scheme. So then I went back to the doctor, and the doctor said that whatever representative from the company she had in with her that day said that they had applied for it to go onto the drugs payment scheme. But it's still not on it. And there's still no sign of it. Now, my chemist up in Sagard, Terence, he's a lovely guy, and he knows, he seems to know more about menopause than even the women do. He's been great with me, and he checks it for me every now and again. And he says, no. I was talking to him only this morning, and I said, is that what you want me to say while I'm on the radio? And he said, about the free HRT, he said, if they give it a cost, it's the cost price, then we have to hand it over to the end user and charge them, then it's not free. And the other thing is, he said, that supply is a massive issue as well. So they need to start getting their ducks in a row.
Well, yeah, and I've heard the back and forth in this all over the place. I have another statement here. The Department of Health says it's committed to the implementation of the HRT, the free HRT measure as announced in the budget. They say they've engaged extensively with the Irish Pharmacy Union in relation to the practical rollout of this measure. The minister remains actively engaged on the matter with the goal to introduce this measure as soon as possible. We've been hearing that for a while. And then if you look at what the Pharmacy Union is saying, they're saying that several things have to be done before they can just start giving this out. They need secondary legislation to support the scheme, they say. They say they haven't been provided with a list of medications to be covered under the scheme. And as you say, you hope that this one is going to end up on that list. And they say a tested IT system to record who had availed of the scheme and facilitate reimbursement to the pharmacy hasn't yet been developed even. So it looks like it could be a way off yet, Antoinette.
Exactly. So, like, anyone that's paid for their HRT from the 1st of January, when this does actually go live, are they going to get reimbursed? You know? Because this was an empty promise. This was, to me, they promised this because they thought they'd get the Women of Ireland votes. And that was one thing. They put that in, dangled the carrot in front of us, and then just walked away from it. And then to see what happened yesterday in the Dáil, these are people that are supposed to be running our country. You wouldn't have seen that in the White House.
The White House now is the low bar now.
But you know, it's frustrating. It's really, really frustrating. And I'm telling you now, Katie, in my next life I'm coming back as a man.
Antoinette. Yeah. That might be the only solution. and listen, thank you so much for that, Antoinette. I feel your pain. I hear what you're saying, and I'm sure a lot of people watching that. It's the fact that it's kind of mind-boggling. We are 4 months since the election, and the only piece of legislation that went through was in relation to the number of junior ministers, the ministers of state. That's the only thing. And I was looking at them today, and I was thinking, I cannot remember, and I have covered the Dáil and sat up in the press box, the press gallery in the Dáil for many years. I very rarely remember a Dáil and of TDs being as exercised about anything as they appear to be about this issue of speaking rights. I'm trying to scratch my head to see when was the last time I saw them so passionate. That this was the issue that has actually riled them up to this degree. Antoinette, good talking to you.
And the speaking rights, nobody heard them. Do you know what I mean? It's all just shouting. But before I go, Katie, can I just say a huge hello to my most favourite person in the world, Josie Sinnott from Walkinstown. I know she's listening. She listens all the time. She's 94 years old and I love her to bits.
Josie, we're going to do a little bit of a Ronan Collins here today. hello, Josie, 94 years. Hello from Antoinette. Take care, Antoinette. Yeah, thanks for
great.
That.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Thanks for hanging on there, Sarah.
No problem at all.
Again,
that made me laugh, actually, come back as a man.
In fairness.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well, we're talking about that, and I know that you were also watching the Dáil and also feeling the same frustration.
Oh, my God, I sure was. They were like a pack of monkeys in a circus. And to be honest with you, it didn't shock me, but it really disappointed me because there's so many important issues to be looked at and fixed and put in place in our country. If they could only use some of their energy on those like they did last night, wouldn't we just be wonderful? And it really bothered me because in our situation, I'm a foster carer and I have two boys, both with different needs, one with special needs, one with medical needs. And over the years, trying to get OT appointments, speech and language appointments, SNA placements, and the thing is, in order to secure any supports, diagnoses are needed and they're waiting too long and these issues become worse over time.
This is I know, because I've spoken to foster carers before. It's a huge, huge issue, the stress and the frustration. I know people do spend their own money because they can't get it on the system. But even if they have their own money, they can't get the appointments.
That's right. The waiting lists are so long. There's so few therapists. That's what it is. We need more in this country to cover the number of children with the needs they have. And watching that last night, it was so just disappointing. You know, you just feel like going, oh, for God's sake, you know, just get your act together, lads, seriously.
Did hear the Taoiseach today actually referencing, and he was saying, and he was, you know, he was appealing to the opposition, or he was having a go at the opposition, I suppose, more like, saying, you know, there's big things coming down the tracks here. And of course, we know that this day week is the 2nd of April, and we're expecting those tariffs to come in. We're being told that, you know, if there's tariffs put on European products, we could be right in the front line of that. He was talking about the housing crisis. We were talking about that on the show yesterday. He was and he mentioned disabilities and how that's something that they need to be tackling as a doll. So it's not like they know what needs to be done, but they seem to be absolutely paralysed to dig themselves out of this hole that they've dug themselves into.
That's right. I agree 100%. When you think about it, we've got 6,000 children in care in Ireland. And not all of them are in loving homes. A lot of them are in residential or respite or just emergency accommodation. And we're in desperate need. And to be honest, I came on here today as well just to talk about that. And because I think people, there's so many misconceptions when it comes to fostering. People think the criteria is too hard. They won't meet them, but they're very simple criteria. And I would urge people out there, there's so many babies, young people, vulnerable people, desperately needing a home. And the criteria is very simple, really. It's just to be over 25, have a spare room and a full licence. And single, gay, it doesn't really matter. And if people could just get in touch and just get some information would be amazing.
Is it hard to get vetted to become, because you do hear stories of people being put through the hoop, and obviously you're going to hand over vulnerable children into people's care, so you do want vetting, obviously, but is it very difficult process, Sarah?
Well, to be honest with you, the assessment takes between 5 and 8 months thereabouts. It's probably a bit shorter now, to be honest. And everybody has the same assessment, everybody. And the majority of people go, oh, well, I've no problem with this because I don't want a child going from the frying pan into the fire, which is very understandable, and Garda vetting. But it's amazing how fast that assessment goes. And for anybody who feels that they can tick these boxes, just get the information. If I can give you a website that they could look up. It's ffi.ie, fosteringfirstireland.ie. It's the fostering agency that I'm with, and I can highly recommend them.
How did you get into it yourself, Sarah? Because it's a big thing to take on.
It actually is. It was something my husband and I talked about over the years. And in 2016, we decided, right, let's sit down and really look at this. There's so many vulnerable children out there. So we spoke with our own three grown-up children and asked them what they thought, because you foster as a family, not just as a couple. And they agreed and they said, yeah, go for it, Mum and Dad. Like, you still have a lot left to give. And in 2017, we went through our assessments and we were approved, and we have two brothers living with us since 2017, still with us today.
Oh, so they're really part of your family. And
huge part of our family. It's been absolutely, it's a roller coaster. A roller coaster ride. You can imagine the emotions. But anybody who has any sort of kindness and patience in abundance, I'd highly just recommend just to take a look at it. As so many children, vulnerable children out there, desperate for a loving home.
What would you say to the Taoiseach, or indeed any of the politicians that you were watching in the Dáil yesterday and today? On the back of your experience.
I think they need to take a long, hard look at this country and a long, hard look at themselves and really start to for foster carers to look after their carers. And Teresa, who spoke first, she's a carer too, not just foster carers for vulnerable children, like that for the disabled and the elderly. Look at the vulnerable people in our country and look after them well. They desperately need it, because residential costs an absolute fortune, and it's only a small amount that's paid to carers having children in their home. Look at the bigger picture and look after the children in this country, the elderly and the disabled.
Sarah, thanks so much, and thanks for everything you're doing there. We'll take a break.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're still laughing here about Antoinette saying you wouldn't see that carry on in the White House. We're going to leave that and park that for now, because I want to bring in Jim Halpin. Jim, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
Good to hear from you, Jim.
And you too. It's good to hear a friendly voice from the Kerry side.
Indeed, because you're a Listowel man, are you?
That's right, yeah. We live out of Eddie Bunyan Road here, which you probably know well.
And I do indeed. You know what? I hitchhiked on that road many's the time. But not today or yesterday. Tell us your story, because your life took a very different turn back in 2017.
Yeah, 2017, actually, I had a stroke which knocked out most of the left-hand side of my body. Basically brought on by high blood pressure and a couple of cups of stress thrown in as well.
You had been a fish. You were working as a fisherman, were you? That was your.
No. I used to have a shop there in Church Street, and I used to be a sales rep on the road. And so we had to, when I got knocked out, we closed down the shop, and this. So it's kind of left me kind of sitting here watching television and listening to you on the radio.
It was a fishing kind of outdoors pursuits shop.
A sports shop. Yeah, yeah. We do fishing, shooting, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I remember it actually. Of course. So that had to go once you had this setback.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So we just closed it down.
This is important, I think, and I know you didn't get in touch to outline this, but for people to understand the stroke, the symptoms you had, that you realised something was going terribly wrong, was it the classic symptoms?
Well, I thought it was something happening, because when I would be in the shop standing up, my left leg just give a bit of a jump. You know, the way you come up behind somebody having fun with them and pushing their in the back of their knee, mm-hmm. and giving them a push. That's what I was getting, like, you know, we bend the knee.
Yeah.
And then when I was putting my left leg up in the footpad, my leg would give from under me.
So you knew, so, you had a sense there was something going astray.
I ignored it. You know, just what's this going on here? Maybe just being tired. So then I was coming out of the garage one day, driving out, and my left hand fell off the steering wheel. So I put it back up again, and it fell off again. So I went to the doctor anyway, and he said, basically described me as a dead man walking after taking my blood pressure. So he said, look, I'm going to send you back for an MRI. And he said, just to make sure there's nothing problem there. So anyway, the day of the MRI, I was just getting ready to go to Tralee, and I was talking to my wife. She said, I'm going to go on the drive away. So she said, no, I'm going to drive you back. So went into the kitchen, picked up a banana, dropped the banana on the ground, picked it back up again, dropped it again. So I looked at me, she said, you're having a stroke. You know, she just seen the face. It was this thing you see on television about FACE.
Yeah.
So went down to one of the local doctors who, said, yeah, confirmed it. So he rang the I rang the emergency, actually, and I got in there and they were actually waiting inside me with a trolley. So they took me in anyway, and It's been 14 weeks originally in there with the stroke, you know, having physiotherapy and all that kind of stuff. So I spent the following 2 weeks then with having, out of 14, there was another 2 weeks included in that of having a gallbladder infection. So anyway, I was left out. We had our physio every morning, and, which basically did help a lot. So I was left out anyway, and I was back in again within 2 weeks after having a seizure.
And so, is that a common kind of follow-on from a stroke? Or?
It appears to be, yeah.
And did that set you back again then?
It did, yeah, it did. I think about another 2 or 3 weeks since I had her again to control that. So they put me on some tablets and you end up this thing called Epilim. And it actually made me feel I was having two or three meals a day. It just basically swelled me up. So then they changed that to another tablet, which had to be done over a period of a month. So it turned out anyway that I'm about 6 years free now of seizure, which is great,
right? Right.
But I knew what was actually happening. Before it happened, when I was sitting down watching TV, and my left hand started jumping. So I called my wife, and she said, I don't know what's happening. So she rang the paramedics anyway, and they arrived. So that's basically me.
That's basically you. And what? How are you now? So it's what's 2017. So we're going into 8 years now.
That's right.
Since the original
right.
stroke. How are you physically now?
Physically, my left leg still gets tired. If I get tired, the legs get start. How would I describe dragging? Mm-hmm. And then the left hand is, I would say probably about. Well, it's not fully back. I can move it up and down, move it in and out, but the fingers are in unassisted. As I'm just a bare movement, maybe about half an inch. But I'm looking so far as I have the two ladies coming in from the actually personal assistants coming in from the Irish Wheelchair Association. There was a lady by the name of Susan Ford who was, had passed away. It was Susan at a clinic mm-hmm. in Killarney, and to set up by herself because her brother got a stroke, and like that story, there was nowhere around. To try and help him out. So anyway, I met up with Susan in the Art Courtroom in the store one day, and she took me back and she designed a program especially for me. Because if you look at the, we'll say the program that comes out from the hospitals or the OTs, it's kind of one for all design. So she set up one personally for me where she would actually move the elbows and move the wrists and the shoulders and that, keep them mobile. Excuse me. So the girls come in 3 days a week, you know, which really helped things. But then my left hand started getting cold, and I took up acupuncture with a girl there from Tralee, which actually meant that the hand stayed warm for nearly 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, and made the fingers more supple that you know, the girls could walk on them.
And I know one of the big losses you have, or what you really miss. So, well, apart from, you know, doing the things you like to do, which was being out and about and fishing and shooting, is being able to pick up your grandchildren.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Take your time, Jim.
My grandson is gone up for two. And, sorry. Yeah, you're talking about.
Yeah, Jim. You only have the one grandson so far, is it?
Well, so far, yeah. And there's another little guy. Well, we don't know. I could be a buyer again on the way.
Right.
So that's in July.
And the little so your grandson Jacob, right?
Yeah, Jacob is here. When I go up to the house, they're actually living in Galway. So I'm afraid to actually pick him up in case I would drop him, even though he's 2 years of age. But you go in, and I think Jacob knows exactly what the problem is. He'd just come over and just swing around my leg, and you know, if I kneel down on the floor, I'd probably fall over. And you know, if I do kneel down, I need help to get back up. You know, so it's as a man said, life's a bitch, but you just carry on, don't you?
Yeah, I can just imagine though how that would just be so hard to come to terms with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, but I say, like, I mean, if you have a stroke, like, you adapt. You know, you just don't give up, you adapt. And I mean, okay, you can, if you need something to hold on to, you know, like a pepper mill or a salt mill, well, I can actually push that into my hand now and leave the cover on it and just twist it away. So what comes off falls into the cover. Yeah. But then when I try to release it, the finger just starts squeezing on it. You know, so I've seen this thing on Google, I wanted about this robotic glove. I think I told your
Yes, tell us, this is something that you were wondering if anyone out there had any more information about. This is, explain to me what your understanding of it is.
Yeah, it looks like a glove that you put on over the stroke hand. And there is kind of, I presume it must be some air operator, simply kind of a pump. And it's got tubes running into the kind of connections on the fingers. Now, this you can use one finger or the whole hand. And when you turn up the, when you basically turn on the power, it emits, air, which moves the fingers in and out. Mm-hmm. But there's a second type there then where you have a second glove and you can put on the other hand and there's a little kind of pressure pad in it and it mimics, it gets the left hand to mimic what the right hand is doing.
So basically, you would get your strength and your confidence back that you wouldn't be dropping anything, but most important of all, that you might be able to pick up your grandchildren again.
Yeah.
That's your dream.
So I'm just wondering if anybody out there has used them or if they're available in Ireland. I know you get them in from China and that, but you know you don't know what you're getting.
Well, look, we'll put that out there and see if anyone has any information or they know anything about it. Yeah. I don't. I haven't come across it at all. I haven't heard anything.
I put in robotic hand anyway, and it's designed for stroke victims and that. But I think your editor there actually done a Google search on it.
Yeah.
You know, so he gives me an idea like
what's out
I think
there?
About seven or eight different types. I think the startup was maybe €40 or something. And you go up to a couple of hundred.
And that's all there. That would be a very small outlay for something that would make such a big difference if they work.
Yeah, if they work, like, that's the thing about
That's the thing, yeah. I suppose that's what we need to find out. Has anyone had a good experience with something like that?
Yeah. If somebody had any other suggestions, it would be very welcome as well.
Yeah. But you're finding, the OT is obviously helping you an awful lot, and as well as that, you just have to adapt. Like what you were, I know you were saying that you could obviously shoes. You have to wear
slip-on shoes, and sometimes actually, it's like trackies. When you're, even around the house, I just wear the trackies. But going out, having to wear a trousers and that is very awkward, especially like if you got to do a dash to the loo.
Oh yeah, yeah. You see, these are the things.
Yeah, one thing I find is that, when we do go out, the first place I look for is where's the loo. Then my wife actually cuts up my meat and that kind of stuff for me.
Yeah.
And there are some times when she actually dresses me as well, especially with buttons and that. Buttons can be a bit of a pain. But, you do have, like me, you can wear T-shirts and you can wear trackies, but, that comes when you start going out, then, you can't really go out wearing those.
How generally, Jim, just in your own head, do you have a positive outlook on life now, or do you feel like you were lucky to have retained as much as you have? Like, where's your head on it now?
Well, the way I look at these things, there are people a lot worse off than me. As I said to you earlier today, you go up to Dunleary and you see what's up with kids on the side in wheelchairs. But, I could go on, put my head under the bucket and just say, right, forget about it. Well, at the very start, I'd be walking down Church Street there and I'd see our shop shows on. And you'd get very bitter about the whole thing. And then you'd just say, look, put it behind you. It's done, it's gone, it's finished. Just put it behind you. So I have decided, I go away for walks there with the dog and, I come back and do a bit of computer stuff and, sit down and watch a bit of TV and that. Mm-hmm. But I'd like you out there doing the garden, cutting the grass and that. And one thing I feel sorry for is my wife, because she actually does most of the work now with cutting grass and cutting hedges and that kind of stuff. It's stuff that I should be doing.
Yeah, well, there's always...
It's harder than her than it is on me. But I must say, when I was in hospital there for the 14 weeks, she came in every night.
Yeah.
The hospital, the staff there were absolutely brilliant. Fantastic, they couldn't be more helpful. And people complain about food in hospitals. I must say, we had one of the best food I ever had. We were actually given a menu there some days to actually pick up. We wanted for our tea and our dinner. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, just the staff at KUH, like, we're fabulous.
Yes, and I know that for a fact, for sure.
Yeah.
And you're not the first that I've heard say that, Jim.
Yeah.
Jim, thanks so much, and best of luck with that. And if we hear anything, we'll come back to it, and we'll pass it on to you.
You have my number, and you got my email there.
Absolutely.
Yes, Katie, thanks for coming back. Appreciate it.
Jim, great talking to you, and the very, very best of luck there to yourself and to your wife.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we had great fun yesterday talking about words and pronunciations of words and, you know, words that we don't know where they came from but and seem to be very specific to certain parts of the country. And one of them was a word for what I would call runners now. And I think yesterday we were told they were called Paul O'Donnell.
Yeah, I'm here.
What do you call runners?
Old tackies, all day long.
And where are you based now?
I'm actually living in Brighton, but I discovered while I was over here that a few South African friends, and it was when I said, oh, I must get some new tackies, and they went, you say that as well? So, yeah, they say it in South Africa as well, which is quite strange.
That is so strange. I had literally never heard of tackies before, but I was saying we do seem to have an unusually large number of words for variations of runners, basically.
Yeah, yeah. The two words that spring to mind when I came to England was going for messages, which was going shopping, and put that in the press, which was the cupboard. And like, they're just looking at me going, what? What are you on about?
Yeah, the press is one. Yeah, you forget that is a completely alien word to anyone that didn't grow up in this country.
And 100%.
Where are you originally from, Paul?
I'm from Limerick.
So we were also talking about, and I got a message on social media last night telling me that the word I was talking about yesterday, gwall, which was in armful, that we used to use in North Kerry, that's also a Limerick word.
Not so much. I think rake is more of like a rake stuff, but like it's kind of an amount of stuff that's too much. Like, oh, there's a rake in there. And you think it's a garden implement, but it's actually just a huge amount of stuff. That's what we do.
Oh, we'd always do rake as well. I mean, there is...
you do rake as well, okay.
Oh, yeah, no, that would be a very one. And of course, today, because this was in the news this morning, that the Oxford English Dictionary have added 8 new words, Irish English words, to the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yes, I got sent that, yeah, yeah.
My favourite one is Luthramon. Would you have used that one?
No, but I've heard that. Well, I mean, I've heard a loser was in that. Remember that? What's his name? Pat Sharp. Pat Short.
Yeah.
Yeah, you loser, he used to say that. But the loser man would, I suppose, be kind of like another step to that. I mean, lazy or something, wouldn't it?
Yep, absolutely. Loser man. Mineral, I'm amazed that's only going in now.
Mineral, yeah. We use that all the time in Limerick. Yeah, yeah, especially there was Shannon Minerals.
If you ask for a mineral in a pub in Brighton, what would you get?
Oh, just look at you. I mean, you can't even ask for a red lemonade. Would you whiskey? You just look at you. What? Red lemonade?
There's a whole other thing, of course, about the... Was it Cavan? Well, Cavan was a specific Cavan Cola. There was a Cavan Cola apparently was... There was all sorts of specific drinks that you could only get in counties. Like, they were kind of... They stopped at borders. Let me go to more of them here. Blah, of course. Anyone from Waterford will know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, somebody's saying, oh, yeah, Donegal Special. That's another... another drink that you'll only get in one part of the country. I don't know if that must be gone. Oh, it's another mineral, apparently. Class. Class. Not as in, obviously, not the class in school.
Oh, yeah, that was class. Oh, that was class, man.
Yeah, that's... I think that's... They say that... I know they say it down Waterford direction as well, but I think it's probably around the country. Debs.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have thought the whole country knows Debs.
Debs. I mean, I thought everybody went to Debs.
Marto. Again, fairly Marto, mainstream, I would have thought.
Probably more Dublin, I reckon, on that one.
Spice bag.
Never heard that one. Never heard that one.
Well, I suppose it is a spice bag. They're just talking about the spice bag that you get. Did you get in your in a good Chinese or a good chipper? And tack the maggot again.
No, I thought I had a different. Yeah. Oh, tack the maggot. We all always use that one. Stop acting the maggot. I think even my mother used to say that to me.
Do you like any other words over there that people look at you sideways, Paul? When you any other phrases?
Oh, I mean, I was thinking about this today after my phone call from your researcher. And it's here so long now that I think I've dropped most of them.
Yeah.
You kind of like, there's no point in saying them because they just look at you and go, what are you on about? Yeah. Obviously, with an English accent rather than an Irish one.
Yeah, well, you still sound like you're not long out of Limerick, Paul.
That's because, funny enough, when I speak to somebody from home, the accent comes straight back. But as soon as I come back, like as soon as I hang up now, the English accent will kick straight back in. It's weird.
I know, we all have a bit of that. Paul, thanks for that. I have another Paul on the line. Paul, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
Yeah, what do you call runners?
Well, I call runners, but I do know that in Limerick they are called tackies. And the only other place I've ever come across them being called tackies is in the townships in South Africa. They call them tackies as well. And I couldn't believe they called them tackies out there as well. Because a lot of Irish people wouldn't know they're called tackies. Wouldn't have a clue what people are saying when they're calling them tackies.
And have you been to the townships of South Africa, Paul?
Yes, I go out with Melon Educate every year. We've been going out there since 2004, so I've been in the townships quite a few times. And
This is the Niall Mellon charity where you built houses.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we used to build houses. Now we go into schools and we build schools. Since 2014, we've been building schools. So. Yeah, we would often bring out, donations to them, clothes, footwear and that. And you bring a pair of runners and the kids, a pair of tackies. And that's where I heard the name just pulled me over. I couldn't believe it.
And any idea where that came from?
No idea. I do business down in Limerick and I'm a sales rep, so I sell to shops that do clothes and footwear, so I've heard them call them tackies, but I've never heard it in any other part of the country except Limerick, and then come across it in South Africa. It's bizarre.
Bizarre. I'd love to know what that connection is.
No idea.
Hang on. I've got somebody here who calls them something entirely different and even more interesting. Owen, wait till you hear this one, Paul. Owen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
What do you call, what I call runners, what Limerick and South African people call tackies, what do you call them?
Well, I still call them runners, but I the story I was telling was when I was a small boy, we moved around a lot. My dad was in the railway. And in 1973, we moved from Ennis into Limerick. Now, we're Cork people originally. I must state that from the outset. We lived in exile for a couple of years in various places. But in 73, we moved from Ennis into Limerick. And my mother brought me into Rocha Stores in Limerick and went downstairs and asked the lady where would she find a pair of rubber dollies for this fella. And the lady inside in Rocha Stores was looking at my mother as if she had four heads, and what was she going buying for this child at 8 years of age? But yeah, in Cork, there are a lot of people still call them rubber dollies.
Rubber dollies, which
yeah.
In fairness,
and they were a particular type of shoe then as well, Katie. They were made by Dunlops, and they were kind of white or black plimsolls, and you got that white polish in the little bottle that you squeezed on to whiten them every now and again.
Oh, we used to get that, yeah. That was a Sunday job.
Yeah, I remember talking to, writing actually to John Creedon when he was on the Lunchtime Show many years ago, because John said that this woman had put her son's rubber dollies into the washing machine to wash them, but the smell only got worse. And John was saying that, you can't be washing rubber dollies like that. And I wrote to John saying, John, what was the rest of the country thinking when you were talking about washing rubber dollies in a washing machine? Because, and then the whole week was kind of taken over, similar to your show now, Katie, about what they call them. And I think up around Drogheda or Dundalk, they're goggins and they're tackies. And apparently the word tackies came from the sound that they made while walking on hospital floors or lino floors. You know, that squeaky little sound that the runner would make on the floor.
That's where that came from. The other one I've heard is gutties. I don't know if any. Have any of you heard that, Paul? Have you ever heard them called rubber dollies?
No, but I have heard of gutties, all right, and I'm just not 100% sure what part of the country they're called gutties. It could be Donegal, but I'm not 100% sure. But I have heard them being called gutties before, all right.
I'm going to take a break there, but thanks for that, Paul. Thanks, Owen. And I'll come back to this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And now, as part of our campaign to get the word gwall into the Oxford Dictionary, Josephine, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
So you're not from Kerry?
No, I'm from Clare originally, but I've been out of there 40 years now. I'm in Kildare, but we use the word gwall all the time. You send out the gwall of turf.
Turf, yeah. Was it turf always? Yeah, it was always
turf, yeah.
And the other unit of measurement that came up yesterday, mom.
Mom. Yeah, my son was asking my mother. Now, I didn't hear that word much growing up, but he was asking her, how does she make her brown bread? And she was saying, you know, just a few moms of flour and a fist of this and a fist of bran and a pinch of salt. No measurements. He wanted real measurements to be able to make it. But that was kind of, I thought, to the word she'd made up herself. But a lady yesterday was saying the word mom as well, so it obviously was a word that they would have used.
It must have been, yeah. I must say, not ringing a bell with me, but that's too much of a coincidence if it's popping up twice. So if anyone else knows that or where it might have come from, get us in touch. And you have a few more words as well, Josephine.
Well, we used to have slúchán for dinner in the springtime with bacon and potatoes. It was, you'd pick it at the, I'm from West Clare, so out on the rocks at the beach, and we'd be brought up on freezing day because it was always, you know, February and March. Picking slúchán for ages, then she used to wash it in.
What was it seaweed or was it like a plant?
Yeah, it's like seaweed. It grows on the rocks. It's black and it's slimy. Absolutely disgusting, I think. But it couldn't. We had to eat it as kids, but to eat that or get nothing for dinner. But it was on the rocks, like, and it was kind of stuck onto the rocks, and you pulled it off. And she had to wash it in salt water at the beach to get all the sand out of it. And then when she went home, she could wash it in fresh water then at that stage and boil it, which was black. You know, I was actually down at home a few weeks ago, and my sister was cooking it for her husband, and my brothers, they still love it. But it's only a small window of, you know, the time of the year that you can actually eat it. You know, she wouldn't, if somebody came in May and said to her, do you want to look on? She said, no, it's out of season. You can't eat it now. But nobody else ever heard, even locals at home, people we went to school with, would say, do you have to look on? And they'd say no. But a few close neighbours would have it. They'd often come in and say, oh, are you cooking to look on? I'd love to have some. So I don't know if it's the word they made up or what it is.
Slúchán. And you think it's actually seaweed rather than, say, something like samphire, which would grow on rocks, you know, by the seaside?
Well, you see, I don't know. I think it's probably, what did you say, samphire? See, I never heard that word, you know, and I'm only from a mile from the beach. But you'd still see people now in the rocks, they're picking something, and we still, my kids now still say, oh, they're picking slúchán, because My daughter-in-law, which is my son's partner, she's Spanish, and he was showing her a group of people one day, and he said, oh, they're picking slúchán. And she said, who's picking slúchán? And he kept saying, they're picking to look on. She thought it was a person. And she said, yeah, but who is picking to look on? So it's a joke now. We see anybody out, we say, oh, there's picking to look on.
I wonder, is it a Clare thing? Is it just a Clare thing? I've never, ever heard it before, but... in terms of whether it's is it a Clare word or is it a Clare food thing that that's not really found or eaten anywhere else? I'd love to hear that. We'll put that out there.
I'd love to know as well.
Let's see if any of our Clare listeners have more info on that for us. Yeah, I love it. Mom and Slocon. Slocon.
Yeah, there's loads of words that, I don't know, like that, whether they were taken from Irish words and kind of translated to English, or we used to have, this be a thing on the ground, a door there, we used to call it. It was like a big earwig, which was all black, but, it was like a scorpion, really. It would give you a nice bite if you were bitten by it. But my father didn't know what the real name was, and we used to always call it a door there. And people knew it as a door there.
Again, so, I've no idea. I've never heard of door there. and they don't sound like things I'd like to find in my bed either.
No, exactly.
Josephine, I have to take another break. Thanks for that. Take care.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, before we go, we've been talking on this show this week and last week about midwives and handy women and that world where people went from house to house bringing babies into the world. And what kept popping up was stories about the big snow of 1947. Again and again we heard about it. And Breen, you got in touch because you have another story about the snow in 1947.
Yes, Katie, I'll just begin by saying that I was born in the middle of January 1947, and about a fortnight later, in the first days of February, my parents were going to bed one night and it was snowing very heavily, but they didn't pay much attention, they just went on to bed. And a number of hours later, my mother and father could hear thumping on the door below and shouting and somebody making a lot of noise. So my father hurriedly dressed and went down, and he shouted, "Who's there?" And this muffled voice came from the far side, "This is Francie Flanagan, my wife's having a baby, and I need help, I need the doctor." Well, I'll just digress for a moment and I'll tell you a little bit about the background. Francie was a neighbouring farmer, a small farmer, and many a time I heard about the misfortune that had befallen his father, who went to America in 1914 or 1913 to earn money to send home to his family struggling in Ireland. So 4 or 5 years later, he was ready to come home and had a bit of money saved up. And he bought a big trunk, one of those big American trunks that you see in the films, and he filled it up with all his goods and chattels and sent it by ship off to Ireland. And then he contracted the great fever of 1918 and died in early 1919. So his trunk arrived home about 2 months later, and the unfortunate man lying in a grave in Buffalo, New York. But at any rate, I'll return to this business about the snow.
Right.
Yeah, my father opened the door and he was expecting to look at Francie's face, but he was looking at his boots. The snow had banked up 5 feet high against the wall of the house, against the door. And he shouted down to him, "I need help, I need help." So my father told him to head on home as best he could. So Francie headed off and my father put on a pair of Wellingtons or whatever he put on, and he struggled for about a half an hour, and he reached two neighbours' houses and he shouted and got them out of bed and explained that he was hoping to go to the local town to get a doctor. So they tackled a big farm horse, 18 hands high, big heavy horse that would travel well in the snow. And they tackled the horse into an appliance. We used to call it, I think the English word, the Scottish word is called slipe, S-L-I-P-E. But around here we call it by its Gaelic word, a drug, D-R-U-G. It's like a cart with no wheels. But to tackle this big horse into the drug and headed for Carrickmacross here in County Monaghan, which was the local town, was 5 miles away. But the poor horse kept plunging in the snow and sinking to his belly and couldn't continue. And they had only gone a quarter of a mile when they had to turn around in failure and admit that they couldn't manage it. So they made their way to Francie's house, and they didn't know whether they were walking on fields or hedges or laneways or gardens or what. But they were dreading what they would meet in Francie's house. But he met them at the door and he said that his wife had delivered the baby herself and that mother and baby were doing well. Now, that young baby is just a fortnight older, no, a fortnight younger than myself. And we often meet. Actually, I met him last week. We were having a wee bit of a joke about the two, the way the two of us were the same age in the big snow of 1947. But at any rate, that same night, the night of the bad blizzard, a few miles away from where we lived, a local man was coming home from somewhere and the blizzard broke out and he took shelter behind a tree. And the next morning he was found with serious hypothermia and he was taken home, but he died. And then there was a third incident in this area. The priest's housekeeper died in Castleblaney, which was 6 or 7 miles in the other direction. And he insisted on getting her home to be buried in the local parish graveyard. Mm-hmm. And some men were employed again with a heavy farm horse and a drug, and off they went. And they reached Castleblaney and got the corpse and the coffin and headed for home. But halfway home, the blizzard was so bad that the coffin had to be taken out of the drug and placed in a farmer's shed alongside the roadway, left there for days and days. And the priest was very, very angry about it. But there was nothing they could do. And my mother couldn't help this lady who was in trouble, because I was only 2 weeks old. My mother had a new baby, namely myself, and she had 4 or 5 other children young as well, and she couldn't help. But that lady, her name was Mrs. Flanagan. Her name was Kathleen, but I never called her Kathleen because everybody was Mrs. when I was growing up. But that's beside the point. She and I were we had a deep friendship all our lives. But
Breen, I'm going to, because we're coming up to the top of the hour. Yeah. You have just reinforced what I've been saying all week, is that somebody out there has to make a documentary about the big snow of 47. There are so many absolutely brilliant stories, and you tell that one very, very well. When people say there's a bit of snow there now.
I remember when we were growing up, if we're supposing there was a little bit of snow, maybe a half an inch, you might say to some old man going past on a bicycle, isn't that a lot of snow? What about 47? But all said that. What about 47?
You never top 47. Breen, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, love that. Love that story, and so well told. A few seconds left. Brendan, good afternoon.
How are you? Just a quick one to say that Slauchom is a word it's an Irish word for a seaweed called the Japanese sort of nori, N-O-R-I, and also the Welsh people call it laver, L-A-V-E-R, and they use it to make bread. It's common on the shores, and as that woman said, it's quite dark and kind of slippy. So it's an Irish word.
Is that the one they use in sushi, the Japanese?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That's one of the seaweeds they use in sushi. Yeah.
Well, we have to go back and tell Josephine now that it's a very sophisticated thing that she's that they were out picking and that she's turning her nose up at. Brendan,
the Latin name is Porphyra umbilicalis.
Porphyra umbilicalis. Love it.
Porphyra.
Porphyra. Give us
umbilicalis.
Umbilicalis. Okay.
There you go.
Every day is a school day. Brendan, thank you so much for that. We've one thing sorted before the programme ended. On sound today was Niall McGonigal. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. Today's programme was produced by Owen McLaughlin. And that's it. Stand by now for Ray.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home this spring with new curtains. Explore our stylish collection now at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.